Welcome to the Anti-Pattern Podcast, your ticket to the revolution in digital thread technologies. Please welcome, live from Mannheim, Germany, your hosts, Christian Mucheo and Michael Fenning.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the now fifth episode of the Anti-Pattern Podcast.
Hey, guys.
Our today's title is The Good, The Bad, and The Agent. And I recently got the question where these titles come from.
It's a good question.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty obvious that they are inspired by movie titles.
Except for the first episode. In the first episode, we kind of, you know, use something that is pretty common in the software development domain, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and afterwards, we asked ChatGPT.
That's the tool to go for such things. Yeah.
Yeah. True. So, to give you an idea, what's this episode about called The Good, The Bad, and The Agent? Who is the good? Who is the bad? Who is the agent?
Two of them are us.
You can choose. Write in the comments who is the good, who is the bad.
And who is the ugly, because this is the actual title of the movie, right?
But none of us, of course.
No, of course not.
Yeah, and today we want to talk about different experiences, like the user experience, the developer experience, and the agent experience.
So something X, right? We don't want to call it XX. That doesn't make any sense, right? But something X.
Yeah. But there was a movie called Triple X.
It was, yeah.
With Vin Diesel.
Yeah, yeah. I remember. Yeah. So something X, or in other words, how people or AI interact with the system. This is the topic, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and we will go through these three axes, and we, of course, will start with the user experience. And all of you know, everybody of you uses some kind of tools, and you know the feeling. The one tool feels good, the other doesn't feel good. And if you're looking a little bit deeper in this fact, it's very often about accessibility on the first hand. Yeah. So how good can I reach information that I want at the moment? But also the usability, of course. So
how easy is it to do something with the system?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. That's it. Yeah. Is it intuitive?
Right.
Intuitivity is a big feature, so to say, of the user interfaces. And this is pretty hard in the field of PLM, to be honest. So developing a mechanical or another product is not like buying something on Amazon.
True. And what makes it hard? Usually the data structures underneath are very complex, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do you represent that data to the end user, who basically just needs to do one job, right? Not all at once, right? So this is not as easy, because the data looks different than the use case in the UI requires it to look, right? So there needs to be some kind of separation, right? And that makes it a little bit harder, maybe harder than in other domains. That's right.
And speaking of domains, so PLM systems, digital thread systems, they are serving different domains with different applications. And it's the art of UX to make also the usability or the consistency of the user interface happen, and not let it feel like they are totally different applications.
Right. So this is something we want to do, what we want to improve on, right? Contextualization is also really important. But one thing that we don't want to do, and I wanted to share two examples of what is it that we don't want to do when it comes to UX and DX, and that is some of the existing PLM solutions out there. There have two major flaws. The one is you see the data model through the UI, right? So you understand this is the data model, this is the UI, and then please go with it, right? So no guidance from the tool, basically, and you just, you know, you work in tables or structures, right? Nothing else most of the time, right? So this is one big problem. We don't want to have the UI represent the data model, or the data model shining through the UI and everybody understands how the data internally is structured.
Not exclusively.
Right. So it should not be that direct, that connection, right? This is the one thing. The other thing is, and that's more for transaction-based tools, so to say, right? They have also a major flaw, and that is you see the transactions. So basically speaking, the database transactions, right? There is one database transaction that, you know, imports and exports material information, right? And then you have a transaction called something, right? And this is one UI component, one button, right, that you have to click. And most of the times the problem is with that, you click on one, you have to modify something, you click through, and then you go back and you go to something else, right? So in other words, you end up with a situation where you have to do so many clicks for something really, really easy. It could be really, really easy, right? And this is also something we don't want to do, right? The UI must support the use case and should be, to some extent, be independent of the underlying transactions and the data model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and last but not least, and I think we also talked about in the second or third episode, which is one of our major foundations of our tool, is also in the user interface performance. Mm-hmm. So does the tool feel laggy? Does it react?
Does it react?
Yeah.
Or does it Next.js?
I don't know. Does it react quickly? So can I, as a user, understand what happens, even if I trigger a computational expensive operation? The user shall be able to understand, oh, that lasts some time and I have some kind of visualization, or at least an information that something lasts for some time and he doesn't have to click around or wait for it.
And the UI still needs to be responsive, right?
Exactly.
What should not happen is you do some little bit more cumbersome calculation, right? Whatever it is. And then it's frozen for like 2 minutes and mm-hmm. you don't do anything anymore, right? Or you're not able to do anything anymore. So also something to provide. So if you have something more complex, it should go in the background, should go into a batch job, right? And nothing that will freeze the UI for the user.
Yeah. So yeah, more technical, it should be asynchronous.
Yeah,
but summing it up, in the end, the tool or the user interface has to be lovable.
I like lovable more than what I heard before, and that is sexy. I really have a hard time understanding how a PLM, digital thread system, should be sexy. It never really is. So that's maybe raising the bar a little too high, right? But if it's lovable, if it's something you like working with, then it's optimal.
Yeah, it has to spread some empathy.
Yeah,
of course.
Agreed.
Yeah, coming to the next X, the developer experience. And this is, of course, also very, very important. So on the one hand, from a cost perspective, so if your developers have to invent each and every feature on and on from scratch,
right?
It's a costly adventure.
Driver. Yeah, it's a cost driver.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, developers won't have fun with the system.
And that's the thing. So who are the developers, right? Mm-hmm. This is our developers for standard, you know, applications that we deliver together with the platform, right? But it can also be partners, right? Partner developing something in addition, right? On top of what we deliver. And it is also the admin, the data modeler, if you will, at the customer side, right? Because we want to offer flexibility. That means developers come from all over the ecosystem, if you will, right? That's not just our developers. So this is why the developer experience is even more important, right? It's because we don't just do it for our folks, we do it for all of the others as well, right? So this is why developer experience is so important.
If you're looking to roles like... what are they called? The data scientists.
Right.
They are kind of a heavy user. They are in between the standard user and developer. Yeah. And for the developers and those kinds of users, it's absolutely important and to be honest, easy to achieve if you are doing it, that you have clear documentation on the tool and on the interfaces.
No one loves to do documentation, but everybody requires documentation.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Right. Yeah, and there we are again. It's something we already talked about it, the API first.
Right.
Having APIs is absolutely important. and having, let's say, good APIs, it's not so easy to achieve, because even with an API, I can query maybe anything, right. But if I have to build up my query from scratch every time I need something, it can be really annoying while developing.
True.
So this is something we have to go into our experience and say, okay, a developer needs typically this and that endpoint, special endpoint, to do some tasks they are over and over doing. And
Right. And we do that first. This is why it calls API first, right? So we do that before we go in all of the details of the other, you know, pieces of the necessary developments on the front end and the back end. API first, this must be working, right? To serve the developer community, and everything else comes second. So to say, this is where this
is coming. But what comes right behind it is definitely for developers some utilities.
Right.
All the low code, no code thing should also apply to the developers as much as possible.
Yeah. And you were talking about flexibility, adaptability, right? We talked about this already, right? Because it's one of our guiding principles, right? First order principles. And here also it plays a huge role, right? Because you can be flexible, but flexible on its own, if it's too cumbersome, will also not help you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know tools, and you as well, they are flexible, right? But they are flexible in let's say a cumbersome way, because you have to do so much things, right?
You cannot
just change the data model, UI will adapt, and then the API will adapt. You have to do everything manually, step by step, and you don't have to do any mistakes that it works, right? So this is something we also don't want to see. We want to have some automatic, you know, influence on other things if you change the data model, for example, right? So this must also be part of, you know, how we think about flexibility, and also for the developers, of course, right? If they do something in addition, right, it should not be the case that they have to follow a 150-page use case documentation how you do this, right? That's not how it should work. There should be some automism in between that helps them.
Right? Absolutely, and even simpler, sometimes useful defaults can be very helpful.
Right.
So yes, these developers and customers of our system shall be able to configure nearly everything.
Yeah? Right.
But if you have to configure each and everything every time, it doesn't really help you. So useful defaults are also very important
thing. And also something that people usually don't want to do, right? I said documentation is one of the things people don't want to do. The other thing is, and that comes also, I guess, without saying, we want to be always upgradable, right? We have to be it in the cloud anyway, right? And so it's not one of our first order principles, because we see it, that, you know, goes without saying in the cloud anyway. What they developers usually don't want to do is manually changing something or making sure that code still works after the upgrade. Right? So the upgradability is also something that needs to run automatically in our tool, right? So that the developers don't need to spend or waste their time on making sure you know, legacy code still works.
Yeah.
They want to focus, you know, naturally, they want to focus on building new functionality, right?
Yeah. So, and what helps also in this matter is having a good or a big test suite.
Right.
That after an upgrade, you know specifically which part of your software doesn't work.
Right. And I mean, we have it ourselves, right? We want to run test automation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we use test automation, and we have a test cases predefined up front. So whenever we change something, we will run the same test cases against that new baseline, right? And see if it still works, right? And this is something that I guess all of the developers, not just us, but all developers in the ecosystem can make use of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Good. So last but not least, and maybe new for some of our listeners, is the AX, the agent experience.
We were waiting for the AI part, right? So this is the first time we talk about in a little bit more detail about AI here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, nowadays, AX is not optional anymore.
You have to do it. Yeah.
So
everybody expects it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also about accessibility, but on a whole different level.
Right.
So therefore, we need to understand, or humankind needs to understand and to learn how AI is working and how AI, what AI needs if you're asking it for something.
Right. Agreed.
And typically, an AI wants a much more structured information. Something that looks, pretty odd to a human is exactly what
what the AI is looking for.
What the AI is looking for, and contextualization is even more important for an AI. Let's say we are developing something in the direction of RAG or CAG or something in these.
We were talking about it. So we are investigating how the knowledge graph and a AI agent are working together. We just, very high levelly talked about how this can go both directions, right? The AI, learns something from unstructured data, brings it to knowledge graph, or other way around, sees something in the knowledge graph and knows this is true, right? And then gives the right and correct answer, or does something on basis of it, right? So this is something we already envision. We are still figuring out how to implement it, right?
Yeah, especially because nowadays, when at this time where we are recording this podcast in March 2025, the context is limited in most of the AIs. It's always limited. It matters how much size you have for the context, how many tokens you have to describe your context. And this will be also one part of the agent experience to contextualize the request as much as possible, as much place there is in this context. Trying to give the AI the possibility to give the most accurate answer to it.
Right. And the question then is, who's better at contextualization, right? Is it the human being or is it AI? And we actually are not sure about this, right? Because you could think both ways, right? You could think, a human being is better in contextualization because it has some intuition, right? It looks at some data and it's something of his domain, right? He's used to it. He has some experience and he understands it without any context, right?
Yeah.
Is that AI is worse here in understanding the contextualization? Or is it the other way around even, right? That AI is actually better at it, right?
Because it knows that it talks to exactly this system of these kind.
Yeah, so this is maybe something for the comment section or for, reach out to us if you have an opinion on this on this topic. Mm. Are human beings better at contextualization, right? Or is the AI better? Better at contextualization means, do you need more or less context to understand what's going on?
Right? Yeah.
So... actually, we don't know, and we would like to better understand this.
And the question is also, if more and more agents are interacting with the system, how much business logic do we need on the user side?
Right. I remember that we watched a video, or there was an interview with Satya Nadella.
It was a podcast, right? It went pretty viral.
Yeah, okay.
Some weeks ago.
Okay, yeah. And he basically said SaaS is dead because of AI. It's not the best news if you're just building building a SaaS company. But my feeling is it's an exaggeration, right, of what's actually going on. And what's actually going on, I do agree with what he says. And that is, on the application layer, right, do we still have to develop so much business logic, right? Or do we see a trend where an AI agent is replacing parts, not all of it, but potentially, but parts of the business logic, because it can directly go into the data, make sense of it, give an answer, right? That's the question, right? And so when we look into our layers, right, we talked about the layers briefly, or at least in episode 2 and 3, we used our layered approach to structure the episodes, right? So when you look at the layers, you have down there, you have the containerization, right? You have everything in one Docker container usually. And then you have the database, you have the modeling engine that we are currently developing. And on top, you have the services, and then you have the application layer, and then the UI, right? And the question is, where is AI fitting in? It's always hard to visualize because it does so many things at once, right? Or in parallel. But if you would visualize it, my vote would be we will see that the AI agents will replace certain business functionality, and therefore it will be on the business logic layer, right? And therefore we don't need you know, as many applications, not as many business logic to be developed, because we can make use of some AI agent that will replace pieces of it. So from that perspective, we agree with what Satya Nadella is saying, but we are not agreeing that, you know, SaaS will just go away because of this, right? Because, you know, there is still something that will require development in Python, in whatever it is, right? It's not that it can replace everything that easily.
Yeah, I also think so. So PLM systems in future won't be just the UI to the human machine interface. It will be more. It will still be more. It
needs to be more. Yeah. Well, I agree.
Yeah. With that said, I would say, or we hope that you have an idea of UX, AX, and DX. Right. And leave us a comment. Leave us a thumbs up if you like the episode, give us a 5-star rating or whatever you think. With that said, I would say
see you next time. Take care, everyone.
2 weeks
from now.
Goodbye.